Hi, eBay sellers. It's Suzanne A. Wells, and this is episode number 28 of eBay The Right Way. Today's date is September 29th, 2021. And my special guest today is my daughter, Melanie, who some of you know from Facebook. Melanie and I wanted to tell her story because her career path to eBay was unintentional. It was not planned. And she had a lot of struggles along the way. So it's taken her a long time to be ready to share that with everyone. But we wanted to share her story because it might help someone, whether you are a young person struggling and not sure of what direction to go, or if you are a parent with a child that just doesn't fit into the standard mainstream conventional path of high school, college, conventional job. So before I bring her on, I wanted to give a quick backstory of how she came to be, because that is important in her life story. I'd been married a few years and we were ready to have children and it just wasn't happening for us. So we worked on that for about 2 years and it got down to either in vitro or adoption. And I just felt like adoption would be the right path for us. And I was in the process of finding an attorney to explore that option, and lo and behold, got pregnant. So that solved the problem. So when Melanie came along, I had a corporate job, and I was going to be super mom, and I was going to work full time and have a baby and go the daycare route. And, you know, that was the plan. Well, after about 6 weeks of trying to work my full-time job and have a baby in daycare, I just couldn't do it. It was an emotional thing. I didn't want to be away from her. I missed her all day long. I just wanted to be the one to take care of her. So her dad, my ex-husband, and I figured out a way that I could be home with her and be a stay-at-home mom. And it took some pretty hefty financial cuts to make that happen, but that's really what I wanted to do. So we moved along, and then, she was not an easy baby. She was, you know, colicky. I learned all about being sleep-deprived and how crappy it makes you feel, but it was what it was, and she was a difficult baby. But anyway, then we get to when she is about 18 months old, and there was an accident in our home, and it was my fault. I looked away for 3 seconds, and this accident happened, and she had a severe head injury at the same time as her dad was reaching for her to prevent this accident. He was also injured. So we had the ambulance come, and Melanie was airlifted to a hospital in Chattanooga, and we really did not know if she was going to make it. So she was in intensive care for a few days, and she had a very serious head injury, fractured skull, brain bleed, on and on. So that was really the worst day of my life. But she pulled through and she turned out to be just fine. We did lots of doctor's appointments over the next few years to monitor her progress. And she came out of it just fine, went on to, you know, be a normal kid, went to, kindergarten, elementary school. Then around fifth grade, she started struggling with math and just couldn't get it. And she went to summer school for math every single summer between fifth grade and graduating from high school. So that was a huge struggle with lots of tutors and, you know, after school programs and before school programs. And it was really a struggle. And I always thought, you know, maybe this has something to do with her head injury. She's just not, something's not working right. So probably about sixth grade, I voiced my concerns. I'm like, you know, maybe this has to do with your head injury. And she was like, Mom, lots of kids struggle with math and they didn't fall on their heads. So anyway, we got through it. Her struggle with math never ended. So that is part of her journey and her story. So we are going to jump in at the point where she is a senior in high school. Okay, we have my mini me with us today, my daughter, Melanie Wells, that those of you in the Facebook group see a lot, but as another guest on my podcast said, we just don't hear from Melanie. So in this podcast, you get to hear from Melanie. So tell the listeners, hi, Melanie.
Hi, listeners.
And our voices kind of sound the same, so hopefully they'll be able to tell who is who. Okay, so I told the backstory of how Melanie got here and our struggles up to high school. So what we wanted to share today was that eBay can be a career path on purpose. And it's taken a long time for Melanie to want to talk about this because it's been a struggle. And her path has not been the standard path from high school to college to regular job, on and on. So we're going to pick up with how she even got into eBay in the first place, because it was not it was not the standard plan. So you started selling when? During your senior year?
I signed up for eBay or made an account in March of 2012. So right before I graduated high school.
Right. And you wanted to do it because?
I don't really know if I had a reason. If I did, I don't remember, but I think it was more along the lines of I didn't know what I was going to be doing. So in the meantime, just start doing something to earn money so I would at least have some sort of track record with having a quote unquote job.
Right. So of course you had seen me doing it most of your life. I started in 2003 when you were 8.
Yep. I was 8, 9-ish. Yeah.
And you'd seen me doing it all along, going out, buying things to resell, selling things that you and your brother didn't use or need anymore. And I think you came up with a few things of your own that you were like, oh, I wonder how much this is worth.
Oh, yeah. Or things like either, you know, I remember listing the Nike purple drawstring backpack that we used at the Peachtree Road Race.
Oh, right.
Yeah. That was one of the first things I listed. And that was actually the first thing that sold on my account. I remember it sold for $20.
Okay. Everybody remembers their first sale. Yeah. That's like the beginning of the addiction.
And I don't even remember where we got those, because I think we both had one. I know we didn't buy it new.
No, I probably found them at Goodwill. Yeah, because we walked the Peachtree Road Race that year just to be part of that event. And we never did it again.
No, and I will never do it again.
Yeah, it was more walking back to the car after it was over than the actual road race itself.
And there were no drinks. There was no snacks. Like,
yeah, they ran out of everything. Yeah.
You can't have a successful road race with no you know, snacks.
So like it was 4th of July and in Atlanta, so blazing hot, and we got to the end and they were out of everything. There was, I didn't think there was water. I don't know.
They had t-shirts.
Yeah, that's true. Which I have sold some of those along the way. Okay. So you started selling, and again, the reason was because you just weren't a candidate for going to college. It was just, school was a struggle for you.
I mean, we looked at Georgia Gwinnett College. We went and toured that. And that was when I was told that I would have to do all of these classes that were going to count for college credit, and I would have to pay separately to take them.
Right.
And then I would still have, it would still not be considered an undergrad classes because they were not college credit.
Because so the math just held you back. And that was just like anxiety producing. And it was just, some people just aren't math people. And it has nothing to do with you falling on your head.
No, it doesn't. But strangely enough, as someone who can't do math can now formulate an Excel spreadsheet just fine.
That's right. You can. So, yeah, we went through the whole trying to figure out, you know, getting you in a college or a community college, and you had to take these remedial classes that didn't count for credit that we would have to pay for. We looked into, you know, tutoring, and that was so expensive, and it was just, it just wasn't happening. It was just like bashing your head against a brick wall. It just wasn't going to happen. So I think you had some interest in cosmetology school.
I did, until I realized how much math is involved.
Right. Like mixing up the chemicals and all that kind of stuff. That's math.
I mean, I like the idea, but then you think about it, it's all math based. And that was not going to work for me.
And on your feet all day.
But that was, it was more because I never took chemistry. I never did any of those high science-y classes. So the highest one I ever did was anatomy in high school, and that was hard enough.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, that's why we just didn't know what to do. It was just months and months of, what are we going to do? Like, what's your life direction? You know, and it was so hard for you because your friends, they had it figured out, like, oh, I'm going to do this. And they graduated from high school and went to college and did their thing. And you were left at home, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so that was very defeating. And, you know, that you had a lot of depression and issues with, like, I'm not doing everything my friends are doing. What's wrong with me?
Yeah. So there was nobody doing what I was doing. A lot of people who were struggling like I was, they still somehow managed to get into school, whether or not they completed it, I don't know, but some of them went off to community college and did it regardless of if they were successful or not. But I didn't necessarily think that was a good idea for me,
right,
to force it.
So I started thinking of tasks for you to do to help with the Amazon business that I was deep into at the time, and getting you to help me with my eBay. So I started you off with taking pictures of my stuff because you liked doing that. And like as a business owner, you want to find tasks and jobs that fit the person that they like doing so that they will keep doing it and not quit. I learned that a long time ago. So you figure out the parts of the business that person likes. So you did like taking the pictures.
Yeah. And it was easy, and it kind of got my feet wet in the business because I didn't start out just on the computer listing right away. I started slow.
Yes. So I would give you, I don't know, 10 or 20 things a day to take pictures of, and trained you on how to do that. And then for the Amazon business, we were doing the grocery business where we were just replenishing things. So I would give you a list of all the things like we needed, and you would go to on a route to mm-hmm. buy them, to replenish, to send in to FBA. So, you know, tell everybody what you did there.
Well, I really enjoyed doing that, even though Amazon, it didn't work out really too long, but, I enjoyed running around and getting things because it gave me time to get out in the world and be around people and do something different. And you know, I would go to Target, Publix. I don't think I did Walmart, or if I did, it wasn't very often. But it was mainly Target and Publix I would go.
And Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's, right. Yep. I would go there too. And just stock up on, you know, we did the bumblebee tuna packs. You know, I would buy like two of the full like 12 pack that come in that sleeve. And of course, everyone at the checkout, what are you buying these for? Oh my gosh, what are you doing? So I just had to like, I make up stories of, oh, we're sending these to the military, because a lot of the times we would. The Amazon orders would go to APO, FPO, and that's right. How I learned what that was. And that right. helped and, eBay.
Just for the listeners to understand, this was in the early days of Amazon when they didn't have all these things in stock. So if you were what's called a third party seller and you figured out the things they didn't have that you could get locally and send them in through FBA, you could usually make three times the shelf price on the items. So we had to figure out like things that didn't spoil, that shipped well and didn't break, that were desired by, you know, customers. And so it was a lot of figuring out, and then, oh, this doesn't work anymore. But, oh, this thing came along. And one of our best things was Pringles.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
I don't know which flavors. I think it was like the new weird flavors, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like pickle. And I don't think they had sriracha then, but they would have like these different.
Like these limited time flavor, like the sugar cookie Pringles. I think we did that one year, like towards the end. I know they sound gross, but I think that was towards the end when sugar cookie became, because I know we did the Pop-Tarts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was another part of it, but I think that was towards the end of the Amazon thing for us.
And you had to grow up real fast because we did a lot of embarrassing products.
Yes. Lots of condoms. Those were fun, buying, you know, 10 boxes of those when you're 18. And then we gave them away on Halloween one year because we had so many left over.
I know. We gave the teenagers that came trick-or-treating, we gave away our condoms.
That was funny.
And then we did the KY gels, the different scented ones and the hot and the cold and all those different things. And I mean, you got some weird looks, and talk about some of the answers you gave to the cashiers, because there wasn't all this self-checkout back then.
Yeah.
You had to deal with a person looking at what you're buying.
And not just what you're buying, it's how much you're buying. Because, you know, when we would do these embarrassing products, you wouldn't just buy one, you'd buy all they had, or at least the majority of all they had.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't remember what I would say, but I think they would make some kind of comment like, oh, wow, you're buying a lot of these. And I would say, yeah, I am.
So or you'd be like, yeah, I'm getting married next week. Or, yeah, this is for a bridal shower. Or just, you would just make some comment. Because
a lot of people wouldn't even make a comment though, because I think they were embarrassed to even say anything I was buying so much. But they definitely made a lot of comments on the tuna. Because I remember going to the Mountain Park Publix, there was always the same lady who checked me out, and I was always getting the tuna. And I don't know if she put two and two together of it was the same. It was me all the time, but she always would make the same comment of like, oh, wow, you're buying a lot of these. So that's when I was like, yeah, we're sending these to the military because, you know, they have like a 3-year shelf life. of the tuna packs.
Yeah. And that's what we noticed. We would look at our FBA orders, you know, the individual orders and where they were shipped to, because we were trying to figure out patterns of like who's buying this and why, because that always helps you become a better seller if you know why somebody's buying something. And all of these packaged, you know, meats and like even the different flavors of Oreos and stuff you think that would just break and crush and not be great to send. We're going to APO, FPO, and then we look up what that was. And it was like, oh, this is an aircraft carrier or this is a submarine. And it was a lot of military ordering this stuff because
they couldn't get it.
Yeah, they all had phones and they could order stuff and it could be delivered through.
Or it was family sending it to them from Amazon.
Yeah. And we got some comments about that too. But we did cereal. We did like the drink packets. Anything that could be mixed with water was a good seller overseas because it was light, it was cheap to ship, and all they had to do was add water.
And it has a long shelf life.
Yes. And I think we did even some of the little individual macaroni and cheese cups that you can microwave and stuff like that. We were always trying new things to see what people would buy. And you were good at that because you'd come home, you'd be like, oh, I saw this. Or you'd send me a picture while you were out and you're like, what about these? And I look it up and I'm like, yeah, get that. Hot chocolate mixes, brownie mixes, the Crusties.
Yes.
Mixes, all, you know, all these things. And in Atlanta, we do get more varieties than some other cities. So we would see things that would work knowing it was limited edition. Oh, gosh, the gingerbread Crusties cookie mixes and all that holiday stuff. The powdered Coffee Mate creamer for Christmas, like
the peppermint
mocha. And they had a couple other ones, but yeah, that was a big one. So that was one of your jobs. And then your eBay store started coming along because you were working on helping me and doing your own eBay and the Amazon stuff. And we kind of quit the Amazon around 2014. It just got too saturated and things just didn't work anymore. But we would go thrifting together. Remember that?
Yeah, I don't prefer that anymore.
No, you dumped me after a couple of years. Like, I just want to go by myself because I was like over explaining everything. Oh,
well, that, and you like to stay in the store for like 5 hours and that's just too long. I get hungry. I get grumpy. You know, I get hangry.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But you would find things like you got me started on Anthropology because I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah. And well, I mean, that's the trendy stuff is my age group.
Right.
So I would see it more.
Right. And we had a thing where you would buy clothes for the Kardashians and I would buy clothes for the Duggars.
Yeah.
Because my clothing line is so much more conservative.
Yeah. But I mean, mine isn't like that anymore, I think, because, you know, as my age group gets older, almost 30, so we're not dressing like that anymore.
Right. Yeah. It's different, but it evolves, you know, as you move along. So we were doing fine with all of that. And then you started having a health crisis.
Yes.
So
what was that, 2015?
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about what happened and how it affected you?
Sure. So in 2015, I was struggling with very debilitating, very sickening migraines. And I'm not talking about just, oh, it's a headache from looking at the computer, or oh, I'm just tired. It was not something that you could just take a pill and it would go away. This was a very debilitating, very depressing illness, I guess you could call it. I would have these episodes 4 to 5 days a week for the next at least 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
They got so bad to the part where I was vomiting with these migraines. And I ended up having to get an MRI on my brain to make sure that there was no brain tumor. There was no issue from my fall. And there wasn't. There was no issues at all. I had numerous tests done. I don't even know how many.
Oh, we went to so many doctors. And then they would say, you know, they would either say they just didn't know, or, oh, you need to go to this doctor. And yep. And we would come away from those doctor's appointments like, is anyone ever going to figure out what's wrong with me? Because you would just lose entire days. And mm-hmm. for people that have never had a migraine, it's just the worst everything. Like, you can't do anything because
you can't even like,
your head's going to explode. Like, you're having a stroke. You really yes. just want to die. You just mm-hmm. like, just take me out of this pain. Just, it's okay.
Because not only is your head throbbing, you are very sensitive to light. You're very sensitive to noise. All you really can do is lay in a dark room and not move. Even moving to go to the bathroom was difficult. And I haven't actually shared a lot of this stuff with anyone just because it was very depressing in the moment. And I just was trying to get through to the next day to hopefully feel better. You don't talk about a lot of these things till it's over.
Right. And I had them for 20 something years. So I knew exactly what you were going through. A divorce cured mine, but that was not an option for you.
No, it wasn't.
but it really just, you... And then you start having anxiety over, am I going to get a migraine today? Is it going to come on when I'm away from home? You know, am I going to lose another day? And that starts building up. So not only are you sick, but you're worried about being sick.
Well, and it's funny because this all started after I had lost my job. I started working at Charming Charlie's. And I started working at an oral surgeon's office.
So back up and explain why you did those jobs, because everything was going pretty well with our eBay business.
Yeah, it wasn't because, you know, things weren't going well. I wasn't making any money. It had nothing to do with that. It was I needed to be around people. I needed to be around people my age and kind of interact with people and really have experience with working outside of the home and outside of around my mom all the time.
Yeah. And we both thought that because I took that real estate job to, you know, thinking this was in 2015, thinking that, you know, maybe I need to do that and get out and be around people. And, you know, it's good that we tested the waters on that, but
yeah,
go ahead with, you know, those jobs and what,
you happened. Know, I chose Charming Charlie's really because it was similar to what I was doing on eBay. So I had that on my resume of I had experience working with clothes and online sales and working with someone who's done, you know, e-commerce and all of that. So I was able to get that job because I had experience online. And they hired me the same day I interviewed. Interview process was, you know, obviously it's a clothing store, so you don't have to have much. But I did enjoy that job. I think I was only there for about 3.5-4 months. Making minimum wage, I was making $7.50 an hour. I was part-time. It was a lot of standing. It was a lot of walking. Too bad I did not have an Apple Watch then because I could really test how many steps I did a day. But I mean, I did enjoy it for the most part. It was very similar to eBay with, you know, making sure the racks were all full and the clothes were hung up nicely. For those of you who sell clothing online, in case you have never worked retail, they do not steam any of the clothing that comes from a warehouse. When you put it on the floor, you put it on the floor wrinkly. You do not steam it, which I thought was interesting. And that is something that not a lot of people know unless you work at a clothing store.
Well, maybe that was just Charming Charlie.
Well, maybe, but the people who had worked there had also worked other places.
Oh, okay.
So it was just a thing that you didn't do. But
industry standard is just take it out of the box and put it on the rack.
As fast as you can do it, then it will sell. So mm-hmm. That was something, but there was a lot about that job I didn't like. Like styling people, I was not a fan of doing that. I put things together that I would like, and they didn't like it. But I'm like, okay, well, then why did you ask for my opinion?
Right. So when you're putting it on a mannequin, the mannequin doesn't argue. They just they just sit there and you take their picture.
Yeah. So it was a lot of trying to please the customer. And a lot of just fixing up the store and making sure it was nice. And then we had those markdown days where I had to be there at 6 a.m., which that was not fun. Tagging all the inventory for sales, being in the dark, basically.
Yeah, that was tough. This, people don't realize retail, there's some tough hours. Those are some long days.
So I was there for about 3 months. And then I decided my cousin was working at the oral surgeon's office across the street and mentioned that they were looking for a receptionist and thought, oh, maybe I could do that. That's something I haven't done, something I can add to my resume. If that's ever a thing I need to do later on. And why not work with your cousin? Because that sounds fun.
Right. And she's only like 2 years older. So y'all were pretty close.
So I interviewed for that job and I did get it. Also, I was earning minimum wage there. I was only earning $8 an hour. So they were paying me 50 cents more to work there than at Charming Charlie. And I was also working both of those jobs at the same time because they overlap just a little bit. But I didn't stay at Charming Charlie too much longer after I got hired as the receptionist. And that was a very, very different workplace. The hours were very, very long. Some days I would get there at 6 a.m. and I wouldn't leave until 7 at night.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I did not get paid overtime, which is illegal to do. I did not know that until after. So I was supposed to be earning a lot more money than what I was given. But I eventually worked up my way to doing insurance claims. I learned all about dental insurance, codes, all of the back end stuff that goes on in the office.
Well, and you were even learning like X-ray stuff. Like,
yeah,
you,
I learned,
you would be like, oh, today I learned about, this thing and what it looks like on an X-ray. And you were learning a lot of, dental information, just by being around those people. So even though you weren't getting paid that much, you were learning a lot.
Yeah. I learned how to take X-rays. So now when I go to the dentist, I can read my own X-rays, which is fun. I know what to look for. But yeah, you learn how to, clean the dental chairs, how to clean the office, like the prep areas. And because we did a lot of surgeries too. So sometimes we would be short staffed or it was just too busy and, they couldn't clean up. So the office staff would, pitch in and help. So we had to learn how to do that properly. Yeah, I worked up my way to doing insurance claims, which is actually very frustrating because a lot of the times, they wouldn't cover anything or they would cover a very little amount or you couldn't even get anyone on the phone. So that was just, I didn't really like it that much, that
right.
part of it.
It got frustrating. And yeah. It was just, they put you in a job that really nobody wanted to do anyway.
Yeah, pretty much. So I was there I started in July and I was fired from this job in October of 2015.
So yeah, talk about that day.
So I actually had the day off because when this was happening, we had Thursdays off from the office and we would rotate office staff to be there to make appointments. So that just happened to be a day I didn't work anyways. But I think it was early, you know, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. I get a text. Oh, well, I don't remember exactly what it said, but something along the lines of, we have to let you go. You know, I had been fired. And in that moment, I'm like, oh my God, what did I do? You know, because when you get fired, you immediately go to, well, I did something wrong. And that was a very depressing, very hard day because I had never been fired from anything. I had never, you know, I wasn't really given a reason as to why I was being fired.
Yeah, you just got a phone call and they're like, you're fired. We don't need you anymore. Don't come back in ever.
Yeah, pretty much. And it was very shocking because I had been doing very well. You know, I was you know, technically the face of the company, you know, I was
on anything they gave you, yeah. You did it and you yeah. were willing to learn and you were flexible and you came in these awful hours and, you know, you were an ideal employee.
Yeah. So, after that, I decided to get back into eBay or at least try. I tried looking for other jobs in dental, in the dentistry area. But nobody would hire me. And so, you know, I spent a couple of weeks applying for different jobs just to see, like, am I supposed to be looking for a job or am I supposed to just be doing eBay? So after not really getting anywhere with applying or accepting jobs or interviews or anything, I decided to just start doing eBay again. Because that was something that I could control. I couldn't get fired from doing that. I couldn't, it was all on my schedule. It was all stuff that I could manage to do on my own without having approvals and, you know, all of that. So I started to get back into that. And that's when I started getting sick.
Well, finish the dentistry story, because what did you find out like 2 years later about that?
Yeah, about 2 years later, turns out that office was committing insurance fraud. So I was getting too close to the insurance part of it to really learn their secret, I guess.
Yeah, you knew too much, so they had to get rid of you.
Yep, I knew too much.
You didn't do anything wrong. They were crooked and... They
had to blame it on someone. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And this was like one of those life lessons that was like, you know, sometimes things happen and you don't find out why until a lot later.
Yeah. And it's funny because all the people who I worked with there, none of them work there anymore.
Right.
So it kind of came at a good time because, you know, eBay was there and I could do eBay in between being sick, in mm-hmm. between doctor's appointments, in between tests and all of that. So, you know, I didn't have to call out. I didn't have to, you know, use up all of my vacation days or use up all of my time off or whatever it was. I could do it on my own time. Right. A lot of the days when I would have the migraines, you know, I usually would wake up with them. They would last all day until about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And then I could do a little bit of work. Mm-hmm. So I would at least have done something for the day.
Yeah. And it was just a horrible time because we just kept going to doctors and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with you. But we just never gave up. We kept going. Like, what about this kind of doctor? What about this kind of doctor? And we just kept going until we found somebody. But so the oral surgeon job went away And it was just a few weeks later that you came up with the brilliant idea for the VA service. So do you want to talk about how that came to be?
Yeah. So I would, you know, a couple of years before that, I was always listing for someone. I had a couple of people I would, you know, list their items on their account for them. And that would
get paid. And that came about because when I was training you to list my items, some of my friends that were my age that did eBay were like, oh, could she do that for me? And I was like, we could make that happen. And we figured that out a way for you to make money listing their items on their accounts because your clients, I guess, were moms, busy moms with lots of kids, or like they wanted to sell and they were good at choosing items. They just didn't have the time to list them.
Right.
Okay.
And I had the time, and why not make extra money doing what I already know how to do?
And you were fast.
Yeah. I was very fast at it.
Yes.
So yeah, I would list for several people. That went on for a while, you know, a couple of years. I did mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
And then we decided to turn it into a business where we would, you know, list for not just people we knew, but anyone who would
right. and
qualify for the requirements.
You were the only one for a while.
Yes.
You were doing like, I don't know, 8 clients.
And yeah, I've probably done thousands of listings for people. I don't
right, know. Because I remember the day you were sitting in the chair with your laptop and you were listings and you're like, Mom, I just need to clone myself. There needs to be more of me to do all this work. And I'm like, you're right. We need to hire more people. That is brilliant. And like, I had never thought of it that way.
Yeah. It definitely was bigger than what I could do by myself.
Yeah. It just grew to be, and then you weren't really getting to work on your own store because you were working for all these other people.
Right.
So we figured out a way to make it a business, and it took a good 2 years to come up with, you know, hiring system, because not everybody's cut out to be a VA. I mean, there's certain characteristics they have to have. And, you know, it took a while to figure out, like, you know, who's the ideal client, who's the ideal VA, and, you know, all that kind of stuff, because we kept running into problems. But let's see, this is 2021, and we started that in 2016, so in October. So we've been doing it a full 5 years. And you're now in charge of it.
Yeah, I know. I no longer list for people. I manage.
Right.
I manage people.
Right. Exactly.
But you have to, it's important to start in the listing part so you know how to manage, rather than just going into managing without knowing how to list for other people first.
Yeah. And you have to do the job. Yeah. And that's how we figured everything out, was actually doing the job. And, you know, it's not for everybody. You know, clients do need eBay knowledge and experience so they can tell us what to do. They need to know how to ship everything they're listing. You know, we ran into a lot of roadblocks, like, oh yeah, they need to have more experience, and you know, they need to know how to do the business on their own first, because I forget who it was, but you listed a bunch of stuff for somebody and like it all sold in a week, and they were panicking because they didn't know how to ship anything. And we're like, oh yeah, we should make sure they know how to do that.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I would list things for, you know, all different types of people, and I would list all different types of items. And a lot of these people were so shocked how fast the things I listed would sell.
Right.
And for how much it would sell for. They're like, oh wow, I was going to put $20 on that and it sold for $100, or, you know, crazy amounts that I would list it for within what was, you know, the market was asking. It wasn't like I was putting on some, you know, bizarre amount.
Yeah, we did see that a lot of people did not have confidence in their pricing.
Yeah.
And that's still today, you know, especially if you're new, that you just don't believe that, you know, that candle is going to sell for $50. But so they aren't confident in their pricing. So that's where we can help with that. But so, you know, we got that going. And then, you know, back to your medical journey.
Yes. So yeah, it was actually good to have those clients, because when I couldn't work on my store, I at least was getting some sort of an income from listing with other people, because I couldn't go shopping. You know, I really couldn't go to the post office unless I gave it to you to take for me. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of those things that just kind of happened without, I mean, it wasn't really what we were trying to do. It just kind of happened.
It's just like, oh, that's a brilliant idea. Let's see how that works out. And here we are 5 years later. Who knew?
Yeah. So, well, yeah. And then like in my journey of being sick, I had a sleep study done. So I got to learn all about having sleep apnea and all of the machines, all of the accessories, the supplies, all of that. I was on a sleep apnea machine for a little over a year. I was able to come off of it after losing almost 100 pounds. I fixed my sleep apnea by losing weight, which, I mean, it wasn't an easy task, but I made it happen because I was tired of being sick.
We finally found the right people to help you and to unravel. You had multiple issues, which we don't have to go into, but once we got everything, got the right doctors and got your health straightened out, you lost 100 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, your life is completely different.
Yep. It is very different than it was. But it is nice to see, you know, the journey of, the sleep study, you know, that not everybody goes through that. Not mm-hmm. everybody has to be on a sleep apnea machine and learn all of the pieces to it. Because once I was finished, I was able to sell what I couldn't use. The new unopened little accessories, not the machine itself, but the accessories that came with it, because those mm-hmm. are not a prescription.
Right.
The machine is a prescription.
For those listening, check the rules on eBay about what you can and cannot sell regarding a CPAP, because there's some fine lines there. So definitely cannot sell the machine itself.
Yeah.
So you did all that. And then during that time, I think we figured out that, you could do my social media, because our audience was growing. And so, you know, you're moderating the Facebook group, you're running the business page, all those kind of things, that it just came naturally because you were just in that world.
Yeah. And you kind of were busy doing other things, not having a whole lot of time to do the business page and the Facebook group as much as you wanted to.
Yeah. I think that's when I started the premium library, and I was, you know, making all these courses and just with a lot of creative work. And I just was like, I don't have time to do all this Facebook work. Cause I mean, you probably spend an hour a day.
Facebook group. I'm on there every day, multiple times a day. I don't leave my Facebook page open all day, because then I will be there all day long and I will get you work done.
The objective with the Facebook group is to provide answers or links to things that contain the answer, explained in more detail than you could do on the page. So
right.
People do complain that we close comments early, but really that just keeps it moving. Okay, this has been answered. We don't need 15 more people answering if it's already been answered, because it's just really a waste of time and it's repetitive. And we do have a lot of great members that jump in and answer things. So, you know, the community helps each other. You know, I do hear that it is one of the better run groups on Facebook because we have constant monitoring. You and what's like five other moderators. So that's one of your jobs that you learned. So, mm-hmm. you know, looking back at all the things you've done and you've sold on every time a new site would come up, you tried Etsy, you tried Poshmark, yeah. you did Mercari, Facebook Marketplace, you know, you're always trying new things to see how they work.
Yeah. And really eBay is the most, has the most on it.
Yeah, the most buyers, and it is the most, I think, consistent.
And it's established. It's been here for 25 years.
If you had to go get a, quote, real job, you have a lot of things you can put on your resume that you have done within the e-commerce world that would transfer over to a regular job.
Well, and a lot of it, you know, you did provide some guidance on, you know, Facebook stuff, but a lot of it I had to learn on my own.
Right.
I figured it out on my own. I just kind of played around with different things, and especially with business page posts, I try to pick ones that are going to gain the most traction and people are going to engage on. And that takes a lot of learning and a lot of noticing patterns of what people like and what they don't like.
Right. So as a social media manager, you do have to do some analytics and look at what are people engaging with? What are they liking, you know, and do more of that. Because if you put up, you know, oh, this sale of this old radio, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, that gets like four likes, but then you put up, you know, the Lisa Frank unicorn plush. Right. That sold for $100 and that gets like 50 comments. Then you know.
Yeah.
People are more interested in this topic than that topic.
Yeah. The more confusing and, you know, hard to find things don't get a lot of traction. But like I did a couple of months ago, I did the Ouija board. People mm-hmm. loved to comment about that.
Yeah, that's a real controversial
for it
issue.
Or you're not. So it, every now and then I'll see a sale and I will post it, even though I've posted it before. Just there are new people who haven't seen it. You know, you can be in the group for years and not notice something, but you see
well,
it.
Well, and not everybody times. In the group sees every single thing right. that's posted.
Yeah, they don't scroll through all the sales. Like I do, I scroll through them all. Even if I wasn't doing social media, I would still look through it to, because that's how I learn.
Right. Yeah. You will be putting together posts for the business page. You'll be like, Mom, did you know that this sells? It'll be like a trash to cash item, or it'll be like repurposing something or a new brand or something. And you're telling me stuff like that all the time.
Just yeah.
looking at other sellers' posts and putting them on the business page.
Yeah, it's great to have those threads because you do learn a lot if you take the time to read them.
Right. So, you know, your eBay store is currently still rolling along.
Yep.
You're doing well with that. You know, the title of this podcast is eBay as a Career Path, and it was really an unintentional career path. But, you know, there's a lot of ways to make money with eBay knowledge outside of just selling stuff yourself, because, you know, you can list things for other people. You can sell things for other people. You can use that knowledge on social media. You know, we're always looking for ways to use our knowledge in other ways, like coming at eBay from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's also good to not have all your eggs in one basket because, you know, if eBay goes away, I can have a career in, you know, social media doing something along those lines because right. I have experience.
Well, I think there will always be reselling somehow because it's been around
before eBay, there was, you know, consignment stores and garage sales and people that would, you know, go to one garage sale and buy stuff and then sell it at their own garage sale for higher price. And just, you know, it's just a matter of how it's being done. I do want to go back to when you bought your car with your Amazon money, because that was an exciting day. And that was in the middle of you being sick and everything.
So when I was 21, I purchased my 2011 Honda Civic with cash, no loans, no money from my mom. No, you know, I didn't inherit any kind of money. This was all money I earned on my own and saved. I did have a car in high school. It didn't last me very long, but
yeah, it was kind of just a beater that we,
that was just got. A starter just to get me to school basically. But, yeah. This was the first car I learned how to research, how to buy a car. I learned a lot on how to read Carfax, you know, the whole buying process. I learned how to do all of that. But yeah, I walked into this dealer and paid cash for this car at 21.
Yeah. And so that was money that you earned mostly doing Amazon. You know, mm-hmm. I would pay you hourly to run around and get all the stuff.
Yeah.
And so you just kept saving that money probably for a couple of years.
Yeah. I think it was about 3 to 4 years I saved.
And you walked into that dealership and handed them a check. And I just thought that was the greatest thing in the world, because at that age, I never would have been able to have done that. And there are people out there that will never be able to do that, as far as, you know, not having a car loan and not having to borrow money from family or whatever. You were 21, you walked in there, you handed them that check, you bought your car. And around that time, a lot of your friends from high school were graduating from college.
Right.
So, you know, during that whole time, you always had this thing where you were, you know, watching on social media where your friends were at their sorority things and they were at the, you know, football games, and they were doing the college life that you just didn't get to do. Mm-hmm. And do you remember we had, what do we call it? Life skills school or something?
Yeah. It was life college.
Yeah. It was like, your friends were away at school learning stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, we're going to learn something about life every day. And, you know, one day it was unclogging the toilet. One day it was, you know, calling an electrician, you know, calling three electricians and getting estimates on whatever problem we had at the house. And, yeah, you know, or, you know, how to go and get an oil change, or, you know, all these things, that skills you need for life. And, yeah. And you learned a lot. Who was it that went away to college or something and didn't know how to unclog a toilet?
I don't know.
I remember a story about that. And
maybe that was one of Mitchell's friends.
It could have been. Yeah. But, you know, everything about budgeting and, you know, cooking, mm-hmm. You did a lot of cooking.
I did a lot of cooking.
Yeah. Learning, recipes and, oh, you know, that helped me out a lot, because I could be working and then you could be making dinner or whatever. So, you didn't just sit around and sell on eBay and that was it. You were engaged in learning about life, and, you came
lots of talks about, you know, what's the difference between renting and having a mortgage, you know, life topics, not necessarily just doing things, but how the world works, you know, right, how taxes work, how, you know, I don't even know. I don't even remember half the stuff.
Yeah. You were like, what's the difference in sales tax and income tax? We had a long talk about that, you know, or, you know, what is a will for and what do you put in it? And just, you started coming to me with questions when you would hear, commercials or just saw something you didn't understand. And we're like, oh, that's a great life skills lesson. So you came out pretty well, not having a quote college education. you're independent, you can handle things. Like anytime something happens to you now, you're like, okay, this is a problem. What are my options? What do I do? Well, one of them was when your car broke down and you were somewhere and had to call a tow truck, and you learned how to do that.
Yeah, I did. That was helpful. But now it's like, oh, just go on your app and it just does it for you. So I don't even have to just know how.
It's a matter of learning not to panic in new situations, but to be like, okay, what's my next step? What do I do here? And so, you know, I really tried to focus on that so that you can survive out there in the world and you're confident that you can handle anything that happens.
Mm-hmm. Nothing is a crisis anymore for me. Right. I don't go into meltdown mode.
Yeah.
I go into problem solving, Googling, what can
right.
I do?
And that's your generation too. You guys can Google stuff and get the answer, but that's what does cause anxiety and panic is the unknown. So as soon as you make it not an unknown anymore, it's like, oh, what happens if I have a flat tire? Oh, you do this, you call roadside assistance and blah, blah, blah. And you know the steps to do so that you're not afraid of the situation.
Right.
Because fear causes you to make bad decisions and it just makes you powerless. Fearless Melanie.
I will not roar.
Okay. Well, I hope we have given the listeners your backstory. Right. You will be 28 in January of 22, yes. And you will have been out of high school for 10 years.
Yes.
So it has taken you this long to really share all this. I told you at the beginning, I said, this is a struggle and you're going to make it. And one day you can share this with people and, you know, whether it's a debilitating illness or just fear of the unknown or a different life path than everyone else is choosing, you know, you're going to be able to share that and help people who are in the same situation.
College is not, I don't want to say it's not necessary, but it's not necessary for everyone.
Yeah.
There are plenty of things out there that you don't need a degree for to do.
Right.
That you can confidently do without feeling like a failure. You can do a lot of things.
And your path is your path. It doesn't have to be everyone else's. Mm-hmm. And guess what happened after Melanie's friends got out of college and couldn't find jobs? They're contacting her to sell their stuff on eBay because they don't want to do it or they don't want to learn it. And so you had a lot of that going on. So, and also, you know, parents out there that may have a child that just doesn't fit into the conventional path of high school, college, conventional job, you know, eBay is something that you can do on the side 100% all the time. You know, when you're between jobs, when you're looking, when you come home at night from your regular job and you want to make some extra money. So as a mom of a child who didn't take the conventional path, I feel for you guys out there that have a child that you're like, oh God, I just don't know what I'm doing with this kid. They're just going to end up living under a bridge. I just don't know what I'm going to do. I felt like that a lot of the time. And then my other child is more conventional. You know, he did the college path and, but he has a work at home job as a tech support. So he's on the computer all day helping people with their computer problems. But, you know, I hope Melanie's story helps you, whether you are a young person struggling or a parent with a young person that just isn't going to take the traditional path because they don't have to.
No. And this business, I mean, it helped me through illnesses. It helped me through starting a career. I mean, it is one size. I mean, it fits everybody's life. whether you have a job outside the home or not, whether you're sick or not, you can still do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for spending some time with me today, daughter.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we usually talk for about an hour every day, business stuff. We're constantly texting, you know. I sold this, and I'm like, well, I sold that. And then we're like, I didn't have any sales today. What's going on? And, you know, she's my business partner, my eBay partner. So we're in that same world together, but hopefully we're helping other people with our knowledge through all of the things that we have started and put online. So I'm going to wrap this up.
You know, if you aren't listing, get to it.
Now that's our biggest frustration, is like people with death piles. And it's like, why don't they list this? It could sell in 5 minutes. You know, neither one of us do death piles because it's just like money sitting there. So I think I taught you some good habits as far as, you know, don't buy more stuff until everything you have is listed. Because it really does. Things can sell in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That happens a few times a month.
I did. Oh. That happened to me the other day. I listed it at top. I listed it 5 minutes later. It sold. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So you never know who's out there waiting for you to list that item that has an alert set up, and they're going to be notified immediately and they can buy it. I love those kind of sales. And that just keeps us, I guess, addicted to this. But there's never enough hours in the day to do it all. This is just a business that can go to infinity because there's always more stuff to buy, to list, and it's always going to be there. So, okay. Well, thank you for sharing your journey, and we will see you on Facebook.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks so much for listening to our story, and I always welcome your comments. You can send me an email or reach out on Facebook or even on YouTube. All of those links are below the podcast. As always, I appreciate you listening. And have a profitable and productive and fun day on eBay. Talk to you next week. Bye.